Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday Early Access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Excited, thrilled, delighted to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Wednesday. We have so much to get into in today's show. We will talk a little bit of Royals. We'll talk about Angel Zerpa and how yesterday's game finished out. We're going to talk a lot of draft today. We are coming in very, very close on the NFL draft. It actually is next Thursday is round one of the NFL draft. We're really going to start to ramp up our coverage here coming up over the next couple of days. We'll talk some college football. We'll talk some NBA as the playoff picture is starting to get more and more clear. There is a lot going on right now in the world of sports. Before we do any of that, let me welcome you into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. Rob Brenton is here. Rob, how are you feeling today, my man?
I'm good, buddy. No complaints on a nice little Wednesday. I mean, I didn't like the Royals result last night, but so it goes. Such is life.
We'll get to the Royals in a bit. I do want to start with the Kansas City Chiefs. Before we do that, let me remind you of a couple of things. We need you listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. I also need you to tell one friend about the show. Maybe you could tell two, but you know what? If you could just tell one person about the show, I would greatly appreciate it today. So let's start with the Chiefs. We could start with the Royals, but that's just going to be giving you stats about how they don't score runs. I feel like we've done that enough over the last couple of days. Let's start with the Kansas City Chiefs. This is where I would like to begin. Yesterday, we gave you guys the breakdown of how the mocks are starting to come out for Kansas City. There are a lot of mocks that have them going offensive tackle. Joshua Simmons is the most popular player that has been mocked to Kansas City. There's a couple of other offensive linemen. There's some defensive linemen that have been mocked to Kansas City. There's not a lot of skill position players that have been mocked to the Chiefs. Now, you guys know the vibe that I'm with this offseason. It is about being younger and more explosive in the pieces and weapons around Patrick Mahomes. That I sense some frustration in how the Chiefs offense operated last year, and it feels like a majority of that frustration has been thrown onto, well, they didn't have a left tackle. I would contend a little bit that they didn't have a dynamic running back last year. They didn't really have a dynamic tight end last year. They had injuries in the wide receiver room. And if you combine all of those things, it's difficult for you to have the explosive offense that we, I think, want Kansas City to have. And as I look at their depth chart heading into the year, I mean, this is the offense that we expected to see last year until injuries took over. You have Isaiah Pacheco. You have Kareem Hunt. You picked up Elijah Mitchell. You look at that wide receiver room, Xavier Worthy, Rashee Rice, Hollywood Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster. We'll see what happens with some of the other players. You bring Travis Kelce back for what we believe to be his final season. Noah Gray, Jarrett Wiley, who you drafted last year, who picked up an injury. At this point, we know the pieces and the parts with the Chiefs offense. But this is what I would like to do. We went back and we just looked at the last five drafts that the Chiefs have had. And the reason that I think this is significant is these are all the drafts after the Chiefs paid Patrick Mahomes. Because one conversation we had when the Chiefs gave out a $500 million contract in June of 2020 is that their job was going to be that you have to draft and develop skill position players and you got to try to find number one and number two offensive skill position players, and you're going to have to do so at a cost-controlled price. So we looked up. These are all the skill position players that the Chiefs have drafted since they signed Patrick Mahomes to the largest deal in the history of the NFL. They have drafted two running backs since then, Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Isaiah Pacheco. They have drafted two tight ends since then, which would certainly make sense. You've had Travis Kelce, who might be the best tight end in the history of the NFL. You drafted Noah Gray and Jarrett Wiley. You then look at the wide receiver room. You have drafted four wide receivers since paying Patrick Mahomes: Cornell Powell, Sky Moore, Rashee Rice, and Xavier Worthy. You have drafted eight skill position players since paying Patrick Mahomes. Now, what does all of this mean? This is maybe my biggest critique about the Chiefs offense. And critique can only be used in such context because we're still talking about a team that has won multiple Super Bowls since paying Patrick Mahomes. You guys know my philosophy. A dynamic offense comes from either signing dynamic players in free agency or developing dynamic players through the draft. You haven't taken a whole lot of swings at those players. Their running game, I think you have seen a decline over the last couple years. It makes sense. You spent two draft picks on a running back. One you missed on in Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And Isaiah Pacheco, you certainly hit as a seventh round pick, but he's never ran for 1,000 yards. Isaiah Pacheco is fine. And he is a player that right now some of you want to replace. And he still has a year left on his deal. You look at the tight end room. I think Noah Gray is certainly solidified himself as a number two tight end, not a number one, not a guy that you think is a Pro Bowl, all-pro caliber player, but certainly a good player. Wiley dealt with some injuries this year. We'll see how his career comes along. It's way too early to kind of prognosticate on what you think he's going to be at this stage. You've missed on two wide receivers and Sky Moore and Cornell Powell, and you've hit on Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy. What I want the Chiefs to do in this draft class is I want them to continue to take more and more swings at trying to find those players. And I think that's the pathway to this offense getting back to being a top 10 offense, being a top 5 offense, being a dynamic offense, and being explosive. Daniel Jeremiah, who I think is one of the best draft people that are out there, he said something very interesting. I saw him tweet this, and I've listened to a couple of podcasts where he talked about this. He called this a starter's draft, is what he called it. That's what he called it. If you are looking for a starter, they are available. Here's the tweet. I've talked to several general managers and head coaches over the last week, and everyone seems to agree. This is a starter draft. Maybe not a ton of star power, but your goal should be to come away with three or four solid starters. They are out there. Go find them. Then this team needs to draft two starters on offense and two skill position players that can start. They need one at running back. And I think that they should start the process of preparing for life after Travis Kelce because it is coming. I might argue it is here already, but you're going to have Travis Kelce for next year. He certainly is going to factor into whatever you are doing offensively. If Daniel Jeremiah and the people that know this draft are telling me that it's a starter draft, then Rob, they need to come away with a starter at running back. And they need a running back that you think over the next couple of years you can plug in alongside Patrick Mahomes and can be a viable 1,000-yard, 1,200, 1,300-yard from scrimmage guy. Find your James Cook. Find your James Conner. You don't got to take a big swing and draft Ashton Jeanty. Nobody's asking for you to go get Amarian Hampton, the very talented running back out of North Carolina. Can you find a 1,000-yard runner in this draft class, a legitimate number one starter, someone who in the middle of his career, you won't argue that 28-year-old Kareem Hunt, who is averaging 3.6 yards per carry, is a better running back than he is? Because that's what it did the last time you drafted a running back. At tight end, I like Noah Gray. I think we know what Noah Gray is. Noah Gray is a strong two. The Chiefs are going to need a one at tight end. And I think we've seen how having a really good tight end, especially with Mahomes' ability to improvise and find where guys are, how much of a dangerous weapon that can be in the middle of the field. So I understand the Chiefs have other needs, and they have enough draft picks. I think they're going to be able to identify them. But if I'm hearing that this is a draft in which you can find three or four solid starters, they need more solid starters from a skill position standpoint on offense. They need some at wide receiver. They need some at running back. They need some at tight end. This team, I think, over the last handful of years or so, they have let some of these other skill positions go. And if you want to get back to feeling like you have the best offense in the National Football League and you are fully maximizing the parts around a quarterback who should be in his prime, you got to take more care and you got to spend more resources and take more swings at trying to find those young, dynamic players in the draft. And they just haven't done that enough over the last three or four drafts.
I mean, I get what you're saying, but you know what that Daniel Jeremiah tweet combined with that stat you gave about how the Chiefs draft tells me? If they're going to walk away with 2-3 starters, it's far more likely those 2-3 starters are on defense or offensive line because they just don't dedicate the resources to skill position players. Maybe they get a running back. It's a super running back deep class. But maybe they get a running back and they basically redshirt him and they say, hey, it's going to be a 2026 thing because we have three guys. If they walk away with 2-3 starters and it's Joshua Simmons, a corner, and a safety, just picking positions on the field, they would still do what Daniel Jeremiah said. But when you don't allocate resources to skill position, I think it's far more likely on Monday the 27th or 28th, whatever day that is post-draft, we're sitting here talking, oh, they found starters, and they also found a couple skill position guys that need to develop because that's how the Chiefs have acted post-Patrick Mahomes getting the bag.
Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, why do you not consider Noah Gray to be a legitimate replacement for Travis? He's delivered every time he's called upon. I think Noah Gray is just fine. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers that I've seen in Noah Gray's career. He is around a guy that's going to average around 10 yards a catch. I mean, he did that in 2022, 2023. He did that even when his usage improved this past year. I wouldn't argue that Noah Gray was that much different of a tight end this past year. They have just thrown it to him more and more and continued to make him a more of a focal point in the offense. I mean, he got 40 targets last year. He did pretty good with those 40 targets. I think we know what Noah Gray is. He's just a really strong two, and you can live with that. But I remember there was a time that we kind of wanted the Chiefs to have that really good 1-2. There was a time where every team in the league was looking for the Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez 1-2 punch. If you don't think that you're going to have Travis Kelce pass this season, then try to go find that legitimate number one. You had a chance to get Sam Laporta a couple of years ago. You got Felix Onyedike Uzomah. If you had Sam Laporta and Noah Gray was your number two in that scenario, I think you feel really good about your wide receiver room. This organization is obviously in a very good place, a very healthy place, and they're going to be one of the better teams in the league. But when you hear this, I mean, since they paid Patrick Mahomes, they've drafted two running backs, Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Isaiah Pacheco. So before their rookie contracts were up, you're not sure if they're the best running back on their team. They drafted two tight ends since then, a guy in Noah Gray, who I think is a strong two and certainly delivered on where you selected him in the draft, and Jared Wiley, who we'll see how his career turns out. You've drafted four wide receivers. You've missed on two of those wide receivers. You hit on the other one. I want to see the Chiefs take three good swings at skill position players this year. Draft yourself a running back, pick up another tight end, pick up a wide receiver that you feel you can develop. And if you can hit on two or three of those guys who turn out to be productive starters on rookie contracts, I think that could be the building block, especially moving forward. You got a young running back in this scenario. You got Rice and Worthy who are still on their rookie deals. If you pick up another tight end, you just signed Noah Gray. this organization has to start thinking about what life is going to look like after Travis Kelce, and we are potentially a year away from that. You could build a very strong foundation of an offense that has four or five productive starters who are all under the age of 25, and I think that starts in this year's draft. We can keep that conversation going on the other side, 913-586-7965. We'll also talk about last night's Royals game as they lost another one to the New York Yankees. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for K-State Athletics, 96.5. The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on sports networks. Availability varies by zip code and package. New customers. Service renews monthly unless you cancel. Choice package required. Restrictions apply.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Welcome back to The Drive. If you missed it, we started today's show talking about the NFL draft, and we were talking about how a lot of the early mock drafts have the Chiefs building once again on the offensive or defensive lines. Now, I would not be opposed to it. If the Chiefs drafted Josh Simmons, the offensive lineman out of Ohio State, and their plan was going to be in 2026, he steps in for Juwan Taylor and takes over at right tackle, that is not a bad plan. If the Chiefs want to put another D-tackle next to Chris Jones, they lost Tershawn Wharton, they want to rebuild that defensive line, I'm with that plan. If the Chiefs wanted to go get another pass rusher and put him opposite of George Karlaftis and opposite of Charles Aminihu and fill in and have more pass rush, I don't think that's a bad plan either. But what I do want this organization to continue to focus in on is rebuilding the other side of the football and continuing to put very talented skill position players around Patrick Mahomes. I don't think the problem with the Chiefs offense is the offensive coordinator. I don't think the problem with the Chiefs offense is the quarterback. I think it's with the pieces. And when we have seen the best version of Patrick Mahomes, he had the best version of skill position players. The best version we saw of him had Kareem Hunt, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, and Sammy Watkins. The best versions we've seen have had Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce in his prime. As we've gotten further away from that, I think you have seen defenses adjust and they're able to take some of the parts away from the offense, which has obviously caused Mahomes to struggle at times. They have drafted 8 skill position players since paying Patrick Mahomes the $500 million. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Isaiah Pacheco, Noah Gray, Jared Wiley, Cornell Powell, Sky Moore, Rashee Rice, and Xavier Worthy. They haven't put enough of those pieces around them, and I want them to continue to try. Someone on the text line asked the question, CDOT, why do you not think that Noah Gray can become Sam Laporta with additional targets? I think we've seen enough of Noah Gray to know that he is Dawson Knox. And I don't say that as a put down of what I think that Noah Gray is. I think he is a more than capable tight end in the league who is a really good number two option. But I think when you have Dalton Knox, you go out and you draft Dalton Kincaid and you hope that he can be that game changer kind of player. I think you draft a Sam Laporta and you try to have that 1-2 punch. I don't know if Noah Gray is ever going to be a player in this offense that you're going to throw it to 75, 80, maybe more times. I don't think that's what he needs to be in this offense. I actually think how they used him last year is pretty close to what I think that he is, and I thought he excelled in that role. Last year, he had 40 catches for 437 yards. He averaged 10.9 yards per catch and around 5 touchdowns. Now, I think those numbers will bump up a little bit, because I do think that they're going to use Kelce a little bit less this year. And if you get a healthy Hollywood Brown for more of the season, if you get a healthy Rashee Rice for more of the year than you did, then some of those opportunities for the other players I think is going to go down. But I think we're actually really close to what I think Noah Gray's capability is. And he's a fine, productive, rotational depth piece for you in any offense. There's no shame in that, especially when you drafted him as a fifth round pick at pick 162. He's more than lived up to what you drafted him to be.
I think the Chiefs are chasing the the Travis Kelce replacement, or maybe Chiefs fans are chasing it. I think Noah Gray could be it, but I think if Noah Gray is going to be it, they need another weapon. Like, maybe we're saying the same thing just differently. If Luther Burden, I'm just picking a wide receiver, was available at 31. The Chiefs drafted Luther Burden. I think in a world where you have Rashee Rice, you have Xavier Worthy, and you have Luther Burden, Noah Gray is a fine NFL-capable starting tight end that you would go into 2026, you'd be like, we are fine there. You would not go into the 2026 draft or 2026 free agency chasing the idea of, oh, who's going to replace Travis Kelce, because you would be fine. But in a world where they don't add another weapon of some sort, I think Noah Gray is upgradable. I just don't know that it is a necessity to upgrade. He is, by every definition, fine. The one texter says he's probably tight end 10 through 17. I think he's a little lower than that. But if you have tight end 21 and you have Patrick Mahomes, you're more likely than not going to be okay if you have other weapons.
And this is maybe where I am just on the opposite side of other people, because I've seen this pop up multiple times on the text line. CDOT, the Chiefs' Super Bowl losses have been a result of offensive line issues. I don't think that's why they lost the last Super Bowl. I mean, it was certainly part of why they lost. I mean, nothing worked for them. I think Philadelphia realized how easy it was to take things away from Kansas City's offense. And I think Mahomes panicked because of it. I think they realized, wait, there's nobody on this offense we're afraid of. Now, some of that was due to injuries last year, but we don't think Kansas City can run the ball effectively on us. As good of a game I know that it ended for Xavier Worthy, Xavier Worthy had 6 yards heading into the fourth quarter. So we will remove your down-the-field deep threat option. We don't think that Travis Kelce can run past anybody. We don't think that DeAndre Hopkins can get open. We don't think you can do anything with these pieces around you. I don't think the Chiefs' offensive line last year in the Super Bowl was bad to the point where you couldn't move the football against you. I think that you had a defense that was far more physical than you were and have way better position players to take the things away that you really wanted to do on offense. And I don't think the Chiefs had enough playmakers last year. So maybe that's where I'm just different than most people. I think that's why they lost the Tampa Bay Super Bowl for sure. I don't think that's why they lost Super Bowl against the Eagles. I think the Eagles, with that young secondary in their pass rush, I think they were able to take away almost everything offensively that the Chiefs wanted to do, because the Chiefs had very average skill position players last year.
I mean, maybe me and you are on the same page here. I just think what happened in the Super Bowl was quite simply a little bit of styles make fights. The Eagles are one of the handful of teams across football that can cover you up with their secondary without bringing pressure, and they can get pressure without bringing heat, and that was a nightmare for the Chiefs. Because how many times have we heard that stat over the course of Patrick Mahomes' career where it's like, versus the blitz, and it's just astronomical numbers. And you saw it in the playoffs. Teams are blitzing, and Patrick Mahomes just finding people wide open. The Eagles didn't have to do that. And then they were able to cover up the Chiefs their secondary and get pressure with four. I think it was the styles make fights. The Chiefs' style did not fit the Eagles' style, and it just led to a blowout.
And I guess this would be my question, though, because the text line, Philadelphia's defense got home with four linemen. That leaves seven guys in covers. There's no place to go with the ball. That's definitely on the offensive line. Then do you think the Chiefs can win the Super Bowl this year? Because I would argue that the offensive line they're about to put out there this year is very comparable to the one that they just went to the Super Bowl with. I mean, their right side is going to be the exact same as it was. We're not talking about them drafting a starter for this year on the offensive line. It's not like how it was a couple of years ago, right? A couple of years ago, you went into it and you got a starting offensive lineman in Creed Humphrey and you got a right guard in... That's not what we think they're doing this year. Even if they draft Joshua Simmons, there's no chance that I think that Simmons is starting for them in week one. So if we're looking at what we believe their offensive line is going to be, it is going to be Jalen Moore, Kingsley Suamataia, and the entire right side. Do you think that the combination of Jalen Moore and Kingsley Suamataia is drastically different than the left side that they had in the Super Bowl where you had Joe Tooney and Caliendo on the inside? I don't think it's that much of a difference. I think they're touting the exact same offensive line. I imagine you think they can win the Super Bowl this year. My question would then be, why do you think they're going to win it? And I'm going to guess that this year, now some of it's going to be due to health and viability, I think they're going to have a better offense because I think they'll have Rashee Rice this year, and they didn't have him really at any point last year. And I think that Hollywood got hurt on a freak injury last year. And if you could just improve those things, I think it gives you a better chance.
I mean, we're on the same page. I think offensive line was one of the
and really quick, I was
dozen
read this.
Issues in the Super Bowl.
C-Dot, it's not the same. You don't have a guarded tackle. I'm not convinced that Jalen Moore is a better left tackle than Joe Tooney was at left tackle.
And I know.
And I'm just saying, I don't know how anybody can tell me that to be the case. I know that that's what Joe Tooney is. Are we 100% sure that Joe Tooney playing left tackle and Jalen Moore playing left tackle, that they have improved at the position? Because I don't know if they've improved at the position or not. I just think we are now touting Jalen Moore as a certainty when I don't know if you can tout him as that. I think he is just a question mark because now he is going to be in a position that he's never been before in the league. He's been Noah Gray. That's the comparison. Jalen Moore has been Noah Gray so far.
Noah Gray has more. We have more data on Noah Gray than Jalen Moore. If we're gonna play the skeptic, Jalen Moore has started under 10 games in his NFL career. Noah Gray hasn't started 10 games, but I've seen him play football for 5+ seasons. He's accumulated more time on the field.
So now we're thinking, but to follow that analogy, you and I agree with you there. We are going from a guy in Noah Gray who has been a part-time player, who has been a good guy coming off the bench. You're now asking Noah Gray to be a 20-week performer for you. What does that look like? That's essentially the question they are asking with Jalen Moore. I'm not here telling you that Jalen Moore is going to be great or bad. I don't think we have enough data to know. I'm just simply saying is, if you are looking at their failure in the Super Bowl last year, largely on the offensive line, I'm here to tell you that I think their offensive line is going to be pretty comparable to the one they had in the Super Bowl. What's going to be the difference? They play Philadelphia this year in the regular season. What do you think is going to be the difference? I hope the difference is you have a capable running back that can help you in there and you take some of the pressure off Patrick Mahomes. I think the difference is going to be, aside from Xavier Worthy, you have a couple of other wide receivers that can create separation and get open for you. You didn't have enough playmakers last year to me to beat a defense like the one the Eagles touted out there.
And to further your point, if you, and I, not you specifically, but if everyone is saying the offensive line is the same, they might be better or worse or the same at left tackle. Are they better or worse at left guard? Because I saw Mike Caliendo. He was the definition of league average. What's that baseball stat? War, wins above replacement level?
Fine.
Mike Caliendo was replacement level. I know Brett Veach told us that Kingsley Suamataia had some encouraging practice reps at left guard.
He might be
league
average.
He could be worse.
Yeah.
They could actually be worse on the left side today than they were on the Super Bowl. So We just don't know. Their offensive line is different now, but is it really different? Because it might be the same. Unlike that Bucs Super Bowl where Maryland started Rimmers and they had Wiley out of position and they had Austin Ryder and they had other names I can't remember playing the Super Bowl. It was five new guys the next year. The Chiefs are two new guys, but I don't know that they're better guys.
Let's talk about the Royals game yesterday, and it was a little bit of a disappointing outing for Angel Zerpa. Certainly no question about it. This is where I potentially struggle with yesterday's loss. There's no question that Angel Zerpa is part of why they lost yesterday. You can't deny that. He came in. They had a lead. He left. They didn't have the lead. It's hard to say that you weren't at least in the middle of it. This is the thing, though, and I will continue to say this. We don't have to spend too much time on this. Their offense continues to ask their rotation and their bullpen to do magic tricks. You scored two runs again yesterday. You scored one run on Monday. You scored three runs over the last 2 days against the best team in the American League and a top five offense. Eventually, you should always assume that the Yankees are going to get to four, especially at home. That's what you should assume. Every single time you should assume that. So if you were going into the fifth or sixth inning and it is a 2-0 game or a 1-0 game, you should assume you need more offense in this one. That's what you should assume. You should assume you need more offense. No one thinks in the NFL that if you go into half 13-10, that is how the game is going to end. No, your defense did not let you down in that scenario. Your offense let you down because you didn't continue to score. I don't mean to beat a dead horse. I don't need to continue to bang on the same drum. I think you guys know where my stance is. If the Royals are going to continue to score less than three runs in all of these games, then yeah, we can be mad at Angel Zerpa, and yes, he's the reason that they lost yesterday. Their biggest problem continues to be if you don't score four runs consistently, especially against good teams like they've been playing of late, you're just always going to put yourself in the danger zone where yesterday can happen. The Yankees get to their average, and you got to yours, which is two.
I think I agree with you, first and foremost. The offense is the problem. You're not winning baseball games 2-1, or at least not consistently. We're on the same page there. I do think it's fair for fans to be a little bit frustrated with yesterday's loss, though. Maybe not at Angel Zerpa, but at Matt Quatrero. Like, Jacob Milham was part of the Kings of Coffin, and they put this stat out yesterday that Angel Zerpa has not been good this year against lefties. And yet, in a situation with the game on the line, hanging in the balance, it was Zerpa versus a lefty time. That's maybe not the ideal guy to go to. Now, do I think Q's in a little bit of a no-win situation because his offense can't get to three and he's got to have a rotation and bullpen and push all the right buttons to basically aim for a shutout every single night or he's going to lose the game? Yeah, that's a bad situation to be in. But I do think it's fair to say, hey, the game was on the line. You had options in the bullpen that looked better on paper than Angel Zerpa. Why didn't you go to those options? I don't know those options would have been any better. Maybe Daniel Lynch blows the game last night. Maybe they bring Urseg in and he gives up a double. We don't know the alternative. It's an alternate reality. We'll never know. But I think it's fair to question, hey, the guy who has struggled against lefties this year, I know might not be the option here. And if you know and I know, I bet Q knows, it's hold them down as much as possible because my offense can't get to four or five. I would have liked a better choice in the sixth there, but I don't think it's some massive, oh, the sky is falling for the bullpen take. I think Q had better options.
And I think that's a very, very fair stance to have. I just looked up runs per game while you were talking. The Yankees are averaging around six runs a game. They're second in Major League Baseball. The Cubs are at first this year in runs scored, and the Royals are at 29th. They're 29th this year. And I would say holding them to four, you held them below their average. That gave you a chance to go win the game yesterday. It gave you an opportunity. You just didn't do enough there to do it. I think the bright side, the positive side about all of this is it is about to get easier here in theory. You got one more game against the Yankees today. This weekend, you go play the Detroit Tigers. You come back home next week where you got Colorado, you got Houston. Houston is 22nd in run scores. Colorado is dead last in run scores. You are almost out on the other side. I know we've said this a lot about the concept of treading water. You're almost on the other side. Don't get swept today. Try to split the series this weekend against the Tigers, and you come back, you're around 500, you're at 500, you're one game back of 500, and the schedule is going to lighten up a little bit as you continue to try to get this offense back on track. MJ Melendez hit a home run yesterday. You could sense a sigh of relief from him. You could also get it from the hitting coach. Like, you got to try to get a couple of these bats going, and if you can just hover around 500 while you're 29th in runs scored, and if you can just try to get closer to the league average, I think you can get on a little bit of a run where you can turn this thing around, at least offensively for you.
To that same glass half full approach, and it is weird because I feel like with the Royals, no matter what happens, and not just glass half empty, fans are doom and gloom. Jared Kohler, who used to work at KCTV5, he might still be at KCTV5, he put out this stat last night. Last year, the Royals offense, which is nearly identical in names, they basically had Jonathan India added to this lineup. Through the day that Vinny got hurt last year, the Royals had 4.8 runs per game last year with nearly the identical offense. So, yes, in September last year, their offense was bad. In the postseason, it had its struggles. And start this season, it's been bad. So if that's your sample size of bad, I can't argue with you. But there was a large portion of last year where this offense, which is the same parts and pieces, basically, was successful. So if you can get through the tread water moment, if you can get through to the next five games, let's say you go 2-3 and you come back home for a series against the Rockies and you're 10-14, it's not great. But you know what? I feel like the Rockies and the Astros have a chance to be get right series. And if you can get back to what you were for 5-6 months last year, these same parts and pieces, I think it's going to work out because pitching is still there. I know Zerpa blew it, but Waka was got his team into the sixth, not giving up any runs against the Yankees. The night before, the pitching was good again against the Yankees, against the Guardians. They had one, I'm air quoting, bad outing. They are in all these games. It is just a matter of if the offense can get back to the offense was doing pre-Vinny injury last year, I feel like the team has a chance to take off, and the division is middling as well.
I don't know if I've ever asked you this question before, but I'm thinking it because we're talking about the New York Yankees, and the Yankees have maybe the most iconic baseball hat that is out there. Rob, did you go through a baseball cap phase? Because I would say a lot of people listening, 913-586-7965, you went through that phase where you were in the baseball caps. Maybe you didn't have hundreds of them, but you know, you had a Yankees one, you had a Cubs one, you had a Red Sox one, you had a various, maybe you had multiple different Royals one. You like the patch on the side. I feel like most of us went through a baseball cap phase. Rob, I don't really see you wear a lot of hats. Did you go through a baseball cap phase?
I did, but it was mostly like, it was like different variations and iterations of the KC hat. Like, remember for a while that was like the cool thing to do? They had like the red Kansas City hat with the American flag on it. They had the white one with the blue, like stuff they never wore on the field, but like lids would have different iterations. They have a whole wall of just KC hats that weren't the Royals hat. That's kind of the phase I went through. I was never the person that was like, oh man, I'm going to wear the Yankee hat. That was never me. But was there a navy and white KC hat? Yeah, I might go find myself buying that. Was there a red and blue KC hat? Absolutely, I bought that one. So that was my hat phase, just different iterations of the same Royals hat.
Did you bend the cap?
Yes.
You weren't keeping it flat.
I wasn't like, you know.
Yeah, you wasn't all the way.
No,
okay.
It was a couple quick pulls to get it a little bit bent.
Did you leave the sticker on the
cap?
No. Okay. That was two Americas?
That is, in my America, that's not looked at as a fashion statement. Okay, I was trying too hard.
I was asking if you were leaving the sticker on, because, you know, back in the day when I was rocking the caps, if you took the sticker off, I looked at you weird. Like, yo, what are you doing? Like, you don't have the sticker on there? I was just asking. I was asking if you went through a baseball cap phase. I just wanted to know. Coming up on the other side, let's talk a little bit of NBA. The series that matter in the NBA are locked in. I don't care about the 8 seeds. Oklahoma City is going to smoke whoever they play. The Cleveland Cavaliers are going to smoke whoever they play. The series that matter are locked in the NBA. We'll go through them next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law.
Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, mice.
All right, let's talk a little bit of NBA playoffs. We'll get back to local coming up in just a bit. But all of the series that I'm interested in the NBA playoffs are locked in. I do not care who the Thunder are going to play in round one. They are going to handle their business. Same thing with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, we don't know at this point who they're going to play, but let's assume they will both be big favorites and they are both advancing to the second round of the NBA playoffs. I would also throw the Boston Celtics in that same category. If you are looking at the draft sites, the betting sites right now, the Celtics are minus 5,000 favorites over the Orlando Magic in their series. I'm not here to waste too much of your time. Boston in five. Boston usually has one game that they'll lose at home where they don't shoot it well enough, and that's Boston in five. Let's get to the other series, because I think almost all of these series are fairly interesting in round one. Let's start in the Eastern Conference. Someone just texted in. I think this is the most fun series that's out there. I can't disagree with you. Pacers and Bucks. The Pacers are 195 to win the series. You can get the Bucks right now at plus 160. This is where I'm torn, Rob. I think the Pacers are the better team. The Bucks have the best player in the series. I think there is a chance they get Damian Lillard back at some point late in this series. It's hard to go against pick the best player in the series. I'm going to take the Pacers because of Bucks' early round disappointments, but I don't feel good about it. Give me Pacers in a tough, well-fought six-game series. I'm going to take the Pacers to advance to the next round of the playoffs.
Who's the coach of the Bucks? Because I'm pretty sure he's notable for choking these sorts of things away. He does have a title under his belt, but he's more known for sad exit or most disappointing exit or sadness in the NBA playoffs. I love the idea of the Bucks, and as a person in, you know, sports and works in Kansas City with the Royals, the idea of a superstar staying in a market like Milwaukee in the NBA, I like to see Milwaukee do well, but I just think the Pacers are the better pick. I think Tyrese Halliburton might be the best player in the NBA we don't talk about. We talk about playoff Jimmy, and we talk about Steph Curry, and we should, but we don't spend nearly enough time talking about Tyrese Halliburton. He is a star, and I know that, I mean, he has a gold medal, but he mostly got to sit around and watch them get a gold medal, but he is crazy good, and I don't know the Bucks have any way to stop him. So I will take the Pacers in this series. I think it's going to go the distance. I think this is going to be that series we all talked about in the first round. Mere few years ago, it was Hawks and Knicks, where the whole world was talking about that series. That's kind of how I feel this series is going to play out, but I feel like the Pacers and Halliburton are the better play.
Let's move to the one that at least Vegas is telling you that they believe is going to be a legitimate coin flip. You got the Clippers and the Nuggets. If you were going to bet on the Clippers, you probably should have done that a couple of days ago. You could have got the Clippers at plus money in the series. Very simple. I think the Clippers have more good players than the Nuggets have. I think the Clippers have the better coach. Now, this goes against the theory of take the team that has the better player, because the Nuggets clearly have the better player. After you get past the best player in the series, I think you could argue that the Clippers probably have the next three or maybe four players in the series, and they have a decided coaching advantage. This just feels like the Nuggets lose in five or six games, and it's time for them to make a hard reset. They got to make a decision this offseason about what they're going to do with Jamal Murray or Michael Porter Jr. They're going to have to figure out a head coach. I don't know if you can fire your head coach with less than 10 days to go in the regular season and think that you are using that as some rallying cry to turn things around. I think that is a cry for help, that your season is over and you are scratching to try to save it. I think the Clippers are playing as well as anybody in the Western Conference. I think the Clippers are going to win and advance to the next round of the postseason.
I don't think there's any reason to overthink this. The Nuggets reek of a team that we're about to get an athletic expose in about a week and a half, that there was massive dysfunction behind the scenes. We're starting to get little, you know, snippets and press releases about how the GM and coach weren't seeing eye to eye, and there wasn't cohesion, and the owner didn't want to do. We're starting to get little, like, drips of a major dysfunction story. if there's that level of dysfunction, you're firing your coach and your GM with five games left in the season. I don't think you're, you know, coming together and having this galvanizing moment. I think the Nuggets are a problem. I think the Nuggets are a, for a football analogy, because I know people in Kansas City like football more than the NBA. Remember the year the Eagles got just walloped by the Bucks in the first round of the playoffs, and it was like, oh, it turns out there was massive dysfunction. There was Big Dom, there was Nick Sirianni, there was Hurts. They never seemed to all get along.
Yeah, that was Jason Kelsey's last game.
That feels like what the Nuggets are right now, and they are going to go out and just get hammered by the Clippers. And then around this time next week, we'll be talking about, can you believe so-and-so and Jokic didn't get along? Can you believe the owner was best friends with Michael Porter Jr. and didn't like that's what the story we're going to get in a week with Nuggets and Clippers.
Knicks and Pistons, I think, is going to be a fun series. I'm
really?
Just happy.
You think that's going to be fun? That one smells boring to me. There's always one boring one.
I think it's going to be fun because I could see a scenario in which the Pistons steal one of the games in Madison Square Garden and they're going back home with the chance to go up in the series or tie the series at 2-2, and the fans are going to be engaged. It's good to see Pistons basketball mattering and to see that fan base with a team that you should feel very optimistic in. I'm with you. I think the Knicks clearly win the series. I also just think usually in the NBA there are steps you got to take. The Pistons took a big step. They have been a bad team. They made the postseason this year. The Knicks, we're talking about, you got a playoff experience coach. You've got one of the better point guards in the league. You got Karl Anthony Towns that has done this before. You got other guys who have gone through this playoff gauntlet where the Pistons don't have any of those players. I just think the Knicks are better equipped for all of this. I'm going to take the Knicks to win this one. I think they could win this or 5 or 6. I'll say 5 just to switch it up a little bit. I got the Knicks firmly taking care of business in their series against the Pistons, but I do think the fans in Detroit are going to make it fun.
I don't think this series is going to be any fun. I think this is a sweep. I think the Knicks take care of business very fast. I think, you know, we'd make all these cross-sports analogies. You know how we've talked about the Royals? Oh, they're good at beating teams they're worse than, but they can't beat the big dogs? That's the New York Knicks. They are clearly better than the Detroit Pistons. There is no doubt in my mind. Maybe Tom Thibodeau loses one and it's a gentleman sweep, but this series I think will provide very little intrigue, and we'll be talking about Villanova pro team in the next round because the Knicks are just going to handle the Pistons.
The Lakers are a -195 favorite against the Minnesota Timberwolves. I think the Lakers win this series, and I think they win it going away. Healthy LeBron, healthy Luka. I think they have their rotation figured out. I don't really like this Minnesota team this year. I don't really like how Anthony Edwards is playing. He just shoots way too many threes to me for a guy who is so good at getting towards the basket. I think the Lakers win this or 5 or 6. I think how you feel about the Knicks and Pistons is how I feel about the Lakers and Timberwolves.
I think this is, it's funny. We feel the exact same way about different series. I think Minnesota, because Anthony Edwards is so good, and that team does have a little bit of playoff experience from last year. They're a little bit playoff hardened.
They're good enough to get you one. That's about it to me.
And I think it'll be one of the early ones, and we'll get talking like, uh-oh, Luka and LeBron, are they in danger? Anthony Edwards, is he next up in the league? I think those conversations take place, and the Lakers take care of business in 5 or 6. But I think that, like, yeah, little, you know, small hiccup of interest is what we see in Wolves and Lakers. Other than that, I do think the Lakers take care of it in 6.
I think there's a little bit of disrespect going on toward the Rockets. For them to be the 2 seed in the Western Conference and for them to be a +165 dog in a series to Golden State, I think is a little bit disrespectful. Now, this is a tale as old as time in the NBA. You have the young upstart team and they're going up against the experienced veteran playoff-laden club. I think the Rockets are going to be a little bit more competitive than people are giving credit. I'm certainly keeping an eye on that series. I think the NBA first round is actually going to be a lot of fun. I think we are in line for a very, very entertaining postseason in the NBA. All right, coming up on the other side, let's get back to Royals baseball. Let's get back to their series against the Yankees. That's next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.